A move to restrict some recreational firearm use in West Creek is shot down, and a proposed Yukon mine is on track to be the biggest venture of its kind in the territory. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Those stories and more up next. The Skagway Assembly last week shot down amending an ordinance that would have shut down an informal Dyee shooting range. The ordinance originated in the Public Safety Committee. Chairman Gary Hansen said the committee recommended the change because it was suggested in the West Creek Master Plan. Barbara Scheinberg of Scheinberg & Associates is helping the community draft a plan for uses in the West Creek area. The informal shooting range raised concern among some respondents of the West Creek survey. Some said the area was often littered with trash and that the unregulated shooting range caused a safety concern. While the plan is not yet finalized, some of the alternatives for the plan suggest the borough disallow the use of the area for an informal range. But changing the ordinance at the assembly meeting had little support during public comment. Several residents spoke out against restricting firearm use in the area, saying any littering is done by only a few users, and shutting down the shooting range would be an assault on the right to use firearms. Here is Dyee resident Eric Hosford.
There is a safe backdrop out there. Sure, there might be a few bad apples that might abuse that, but that's no reason to put another limit and choke out some enthusiasts that want to exercise their right to bear their arms and practice rightfully so.
Several residents echoed Hosford's comments, and each was followed by applause from the audience. Thor Hendrickson noted that state law prohibits shooting on, from, or across a road, and that littering is also against the law. Two regulations, he said, should be enforced before more laws are made. He also took issue with the fact that the ordinance amendment has support of the National Park Service. That in and of itself was worrisome, he said, referring to a June incident in which the Park Service investigated after shots were fired along the Taya River in Dyee.
The city should look out for their own assets and not let the park or the state get more involved than they already are. The makeshift shooting range already there should remain as a way of consolidating most of the shooting events. The area should be cleaned up by the users. And we should all remind people to clean up afterward and report those that don't so that the littering laws can be enforced.
Some assembly members were no more impressed with the intent of the ordinance. Assemblymember Tim Cochran said the laws on the books were already enough.
The public is pretty overwhelmingly in support of leaving that area alone. Most of the input for Barb Scheinberg was to keep that area for people from Skagway to get away from the craziness of the summer. And, you know, there are people that walk the road for bird hunting. There are people that walk the road for rabbit hunting. They're not shooting across the road or in the road, but they'll go off and harvest it. It's an area that we should leave alone, I think. This is just not a good thing, I don't think, at all.
But as Public Safety Committee Chairman Gary Hansen pointed out, other parts of the ordinance regulate where in the borough firearms can be discharged, and state and federal law have stipulations on use as well. But joining the meeting via phone, Assemblyman Steve Burnham objected to amending the ordinance for a different reason. He said the West Creek plan is still being drafted, and as the plan is finalized and more public input is collected, any code changes or amendments should come before the assembly together as part of the plan and not be passed piecemeal before the plan is finalized. That was a point of view the rest of the assembly agreed with. Assemblymember Spencer Morgan said he could get behind ditching the change for that reason. However, he said he would also like the assembly to look at why more people aren't using the town's sanctioned and designated shooting range. That may help alleviate some of the concern over the unauthorized West Creek range, he said.
But I would like to say that maybe if it has become too burdensome to use the gun range that is already in place that the city has spent good money for, maybe it might be time to loosen it up a little bit so that people are encouraged to use that instead of wanting to head out to West Creek. I don't know if that's a matter of reducing the fees or something like that, but it seems to be a gun range that isn't used that often. I don't know how often, but if we can encourage that use versus, I guess, taking away someone's right to shoot somewhere else, that might be the route we just try to promote the use of that place.
Mayor Mark Schaefer assigned the topic to the Parks and Rec Committee. The motion to amend the ordinance to restrict firearms use within 50 feet of West Creek Road failed unanimously. And from the CBC, this story, Western Copper and Gold has submitted the largest proposal ever to the Yukon Environment and Socioeconomic Assessment Board. Documents for the proposed casino mine total about 7,000 pages. It's the first step in a long process that could see the development of a $2.5 billion open-pit mine that would be larger than any mine currently in production in the territory. If the mine is approved, the company says it could produce more than 400,000 ounces of gold annually and more than 200 million pounds of copper from the property northwest of Whitehorse. The mine will also use more power than is currently generated in the territory, and it would have 50 to 60 trucks a day going to the site. And right now, it plans on shipping its minerals through Skagway. The mine could employ about 1,000 people during construction and provide 600 full-time jobs during production. The mine life is estimated at 22 years. Casino Mine President Paul West Sells says the mine is large for the Yukon, but is typical of other mines operating in Western Canada. The permitting process could take another 2 years. If that timeline plays out, the company plans on beginning construction in 2016, with mill operations planned to start in 2019. Indigenous languages throughout North America are teetering on extinction. Of the native languages spoken in Southeast Alaska, less than 200 people can speak Tlingit, Haida, or Tsimshian. But a Tlingit language expert suggests indigenous language loss can be prevented by addressing it at three levels: individual, community, and state. Lisa Fu has more.
Lance Twitchell says it's time for a dramatic shift in the way Alaskans look at endangered languages like Tlingit. Twitchell is an assistant professor of native languages at the University of Alaska Southeast.
Sometimes we say, you know, the language is dying, we don't have many speakers, and some of these things get so insurmountable in your mind that you don't really know where to start.
The first place to start, Twitchell says, is at the individual level. He says it's important to speak as much as you can on a daily basis.
I tell students, I was like, find something that's the only thing you speak Tlingit to. Dog, cat, steering wheel, shower head, mirror, and make that switch.
Since the 1800s, Alaska Natives have experienced discrimination, forced assimilation, and boarding schools that prohibited children from speaking their language. Twitchell says due to post-traumatic stress disorder and intergenerational trauma, many students of Tlingit have a fear of failing or being chastised.
Our grandparents experienced great violence for our language. Our parents experienced great neglect with their language. We are trying to look at all those things so that our children and our grandchildren will just speak.
Learning the language is an act of healing, Twitchell says. At an individual level, it's not about changing the world, but by trying to speak a Tlingit word every day. The next step is making a dramatic shift at the community level. One way to do this is by implementing language into place.
When I went to Hawaii, I came off the plane and the first thing I heard was Hawaiian. And I thought, that's what we need to do. We're trying to put Tlingit on the ferry so that when you get on the ferry and you're pulling into Huna, you can hear Tlingit telling you about this place, Huna.
Twitchell says community also means surrounding yourself with other Tlingit speakers and doing everything with them.
You guys shop together, you eat together, you do a lot of more things together, and it's a challenge.
Rebuilding an endangered native language also requires non-speakers. Twitchell advises non-speakers to be encouraging and supportive of those trying to speak a second language. Twitchell says it's up to the community to make room for Tlingit through the implementation of language immersion spaces, like a Tlingit daycare or community center where only Tlingit is spoken.
If you want to learn French, you can go to France. If you want to learn Spanish, you can go to different countries. If you want to learn Tlingit, you have to manufacture a place where Tlingit really exists.
The state also must be involved in the rebuilding of a language, Twitchell says. Part of this involves admission.
We see a trail of responsibility that does go to federal governments, state governments, and religious organizations as far as what has put us in this situation with their languages. So there has to be conscious efforts made to reverse language shift.
Linguist Alice Taff says a language resurgence in Southeast Alaska is part of a worldwide movement against language loss.
Every nation in this planet has small language communities that are standing their ground against language loss. And it's a relatively new phenomenon that there is this pushing back from within the community saying, this is us and we're going to use our own voices.
Of the estimated 20,000 Tlingit people in the world, Twitchell says only 140 can speak the language. He says the dramatic shift that needs to be made at the individual, community, and state levels is not a matter of tolerating Tlingit speaking, but embracing it. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
The period is closed for public comment on the proposed rate increase by Alaska Power and Telephone. The Regulatory Commission of Alaska has 34 comments listed in the file for the proposed tariff increase. And that's a story we're going to bring you on our Wednesday evening newscast. For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friednauer. Special thanks to Lisa Fu and the CBC for help with this report. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.